Viewpoint on Mormonism, the program that examines the teachings of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints from a biblical perspective. Viewpoint on Mormonism is sponsored by Mormonism Research Ministry. Since 1979, Mormonism Research Ministry has been dedicated to equipping the body of Christ with answers regarding the Christian faith in a manner that expresses gentleness and respect. And now, your host for today's Viewpoint on Mormonism.
Welcome to this edition of Viewpoint on Mormonism. I'm your host, Bill McKeever, founder and director of Mormonism Research Ministry. With me today is my colleague, Eric Johnson, but we also have another guest with us today, Dr. Brian Hurlbut, who is the pastor of Lifeline Community, a church, a multi-campus church located here in the Salt Lake Valley. And the reason that I wanted Brian to come in is to discuss a new book that has been released, a book titled Talking Doctrine, Mormons and Evangelicals in Conversation. It was edited by Dr. Richard J. Mao and Dr. Robert L. Millett, Richard Mao being the former president of Fuller Seminary in California, and Robert L. Millett, of course, being a professor at BYU. And they have been having these behind-the-scenes dialogues for several years. I should be a little more specific on that.
Yeah, 15 years they've been having these dialogues, and that's what this book is celebrating.
And so this is kind of a culmination of what went on in the dialogues, why the dialogues were held, and some of the particulars that were discussed in these dialogues. First of all, Brian, I want to talk about this whole issue of dialogue, quote unquote, because when I read the purpose for dialogue in this book, I'm struggling to see a New Testament counterpart to that. And what I mean by that is I'm not against dialogue in order to understand where another individual is coming from. But it seems like they had a certain agenda in these particular dialogues that I wonder, is that really based in a New Testament idea? What are your thoughts on that?
Immediately, my mind goes to Paul and his dialogue at the Areopagus and so forth. And I find in Acts a really interesting scenario. Paul utilizes commonalities, but commonalities are means to Christological clarity. He's pressing to get them clear on who Jesus is. That's his goal. His means of getting there first is to address commonalities for the sake of relational accord. And then once he's done that and sort of used that as a launch point, he presses strong into doctrine, and he presses strong into a clear identity of who Jesus is. And I think one of the real challenges that this book faces is that it seems like commonality has shifted from a means to a goal. And I think that there's actually a dual goal. And in that dual goal, one leg, so to speak, of the stool, if you will, cuts out the other. And the goal of commonality ends up muddling and chipping away at and harming the goal of clarity. And I think that's a real problem. And I think, frankly, it's been a real problem from the get-go of the dialogues, because I think from the outset, commonality was a goal and it wasn't primarily a means.
In making that statement, would you say that the people who were involved in this dialogue tends to prove your point? I mean, one thing we did notice, Eric, was that many of the people who are representing the evangelical side of the discussion were primarily from Fuller Seminary, correct?
Right, 7 of the 10, and Fuller Seminary once had Richard Mao as the president, so he's the face of the Christian viewpoint, and Millett would be the face of the Mormon viewpoint. So 7 of 10 coming from this one institution or having some kind of official connection.
And we know that Dr. Mao really didn't endear himself to a lot of us who minister here in the Salt Lake area after his comments back in 2004 when Ravi Zacharias was speaking at the Tabernacle. Mao is famous. In fact, it's brought up in the book more than once. He's famous for this apology that he made that evangelicals had been bearing false witness against the Mormon people. Now, when Dr. Mao was challenged on that, and to give a specific of what he was talking about, one of the things that he mentioned was the Lorenzo Snow couplet, saying that that's not really a functional doctrine in the Mormon church. And he has pretty much stuck to that line ever since 2004, which is kind of shameful as far as I'm concerned, because the Lorenzo Snow couplet has been emphasized just recently in two manuals produced by the church, and it certainly was not spoken of as being something that Mormons no longer believe. leave. And I just have a difficult time with Mao being a part of this. If he is going to ignore teachings that are found in correlated manuals and give the impression that that's not really what Mormons believe, is he really the right guy to be involved in a dialogue that's going to give us some real understanding of where the Mormon church is right now?
I don't think so. And I say this not just from reading him, but I sat with him for 30 minutes and spent time face to face engaging him on the subject. The net of that, my takeaway from my time with him, was cordial and he was very kind. But I realized we're really talking past each other. And it's because his first grid, or maybe a better way to say it, his first point of response is to a person, not to propositions. And so he's not focusing on the grand propositions. He's focusing on personal representations of those propositions. And those personal representations are Robert Millet, it's a number of the scholars that are here who may share personal vantage points, but those vantage points may not actually fit the formalized propositions that are stated in Salt Lake City.
Now, let's look at some of the players that are involved in this dialogue, because I think that's important. We've touched on that. We've mentioned that many of them are from Fuller. There's also others. There's Gerald McDermott. Gerald McDermott has had discussions with Robert Millet in the past and wrote a book on that. And I kind of got the impression from his book that he was tending to approach Mormonism with what I thought was kind of a healthy skepticism, a caution, if you will. I don't know if I got that impression from the chapter that he contributed to this. And I might mention, folks, that this is a compilation of essays by various people that have been involved in these dialogues over the past decade and a half. And they're giving their perspective on why they participated and the reason for the participation, as well as some of the topics that were discussed. Well, Gerald McDermott was one of them. And then we also had Craig Blomberg. Craig Blomberg is from Denver Seminary. And there were also on the Mormon side, there's Derek Bowen. I've actually talked with Derek Bowen in the past. And of course, as we mentioned, Robert Millet, and there's Camille Franck Olson and others like that. Brian Birch, yes. So some of the major players, these are not really unknowns in a Mormon context. But I thought the purpose for this and the rules that they laid down, to me, having studied Mormonism for most of my life, I don't know if I could follow those rules, which of course tends to prove to me why people of my ilk, if you will, were not invited to this kind of a discussion. But one of the things that was said, and this was said by Gerald McDermott, he says, "My point is that the best interreligious dialogue emerges from respectful but honest exploration of deepest differences. This exploration is in the context of friendship and shared lives and mutual respect, and it never confronts with a confrontational or hostile style. It does not assign bad motives to the other, nor does it assume eternal perdition for those on the other side of the theological divide." What do you think about that, Stan?
I struggle. I immediately, my mind jumps to 2 Peter. It jumps to 1 John. It jumps to various sort of Pauline rants, if you will. And it actually seems that Paul enters with a healthy hermeneutic of cynicism or suspicion when he is relating to false teachers, because his primary goal is clarity first, and his takeaway is warning for those within the church. He's actually not trying to enter in with sort of a neutral assumption. It's actually his assumption that they're lost that drives the discussion.
Here's what immediately came to my mind when I read this. Boyd Packer, who died just recently, he wrote a book, Let Not Your Heart Be Troubled. And this is what he says on page 106. And now I know the context of this is dealing with historical issues. But on page 106, he says, "There is a temptation for the writer or the teacher of church history to want to tell everything, whether or not it is worthy or faith-promoting. Some things that are true are not very useful. Historians seem to take great pride in publishing something new, particularly if it illustrates a weakness or mistake of a prominent historical figure." He goes on to say, "The writer or the teacher who has an exaggerated loyalty to the theory that everything must be told is laying a foundation for his own judgment. He should not complain if one day he himself receives as he has given. Perhaps that is what is contemplated in having one's sins preached from the housetops." Now, on page 110 of that book, he goes on to say, "In the church, we are not neutral. We are one-sided. There is a war going on, and we are engaged in it. It is the war between good and evil, and we are belligerents defending the good. We are therefore obliged to give preference to and protect all that is represented in the gospel of Jesus Christ, and we have made covenants to do it. Now, I'm assuming all these people involved in this discussion have made the covenants that Boyd Packer is talking about. See, this is why I don't know if I can come without having some kind of view that there's going to be a motive behind. I dare not want to use the word opponent, but I have to say that in my experience, that's often how it seems to be, because the Mormons are certainly wanting to sell me on their idea. They want to show where I am in error and theirs is the more correct way of believing. And I can appreciate that. I don't have a problem with that when they're honest like that. But is it really wrong to come to the table with some suspicion? I don't know how you can honestly ignore a lot of the motives of the Mormon leadership, and especially in light of this comment by Boyd Packer.
Well, and neither should you. I mean, communication is beyond just propositions. It's got a whole tradition to it. It's got a whole ethos with it. It's got a packaging and all those things. It's crucial. It's vital.
And Robert Millett, in one of his chapters, talks about how one of the leaders, or actually maybe several apostles, had come to him telling him that he needed to maybe start up these kinds of conversations. And later, when they were having the conversations, he was encouraged to continue. But my question is, would the church leaders allow for this kind of a dialogue unless the organization somehow was being benefited?
Oh, I would strongly agree with that, because in my experience, I don't see too many times in the past when the Mormon church gets involved in something unless it's going to further their cause. And let's be honest, the one thing the Mormon church has been looking for is some semblance of acceptance by the Christian community. Now, maybe when Brigham Young was in charge and they moved 1,000 miles away from civilization, maybe that wasn't a big concern. But certainly when they are in a Christian culture, they certainly do tend to show that they want our acceptance. Why they would want the acceptance of us apostates, I have no idea. Why that would really mean a lot to them, but certainly they do.
Brian, as a pastor, blurring the lines like this, is that bothersome to you?
It's horrible, and that was actually the ground in New Orleans a number of years ago of me sitting down with Richard Mao. And I sat with him and I told him, I said, to be frank, you're making it more difficult for those of us in the trenches because you're blurring the lines. And now we have to sort of go back and retill the soil that's been confused by your public pronouncements that are not indicative of the warp and woof Mormon. They're not indicative of the way that the warp and woof evangelical engages the warp and woof Mormon, so to speak, on the ground level. That's a huge, huge issue.
Tomorrow we're going to talk some more about this book, Talking Doctrine, Mormons and Evangelicals in Conversation.
Thank you for listening. If you would like more information regarding Mormonism Research Ministry, we encourage you to visit our website at www.mrm.org, where you can request our free newsletter, Mormonism Researched. We hope you will join us again as we look at another viewpoint on Mormonism. You just listened to today's broadcast of Viewpoint on Mormonism. But did you know that you can hear previous shows at your convenience? The Viewpoint on Mormonism podcast is free on the internet and will help you learn more about the LDS religion. Feel free to listen on your computer or download to your favorite listening device. Just go to mrm.org and click on the right side where it says On Air. All of our shows are here, so visit mrm.org today.